Hey everyone, welcome back to this Muslim Girl podcast. On this episode, I have with me Aya Al-Shamahi, who is an illustrator and aspiring character animator. She's also Yemeni, but she was born and raised in the UK. Aside from being an artist, she's also a video journalist, and so through her art and video journalism, she celebrates Yemeni culture as well as exploring issues on identity and conflict. I'm really excited for you to listen into this episode, which is probably going to be a two-part series, just because the conversation is really long and I like to keep my episodes a little bit shorter. But in this episode, we do talk about our experiences as Yemeni women in the creative field and navigating our two identities, being Yemeni and coming from the West in today's world. I hope you enjoy, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
I think you're on mute.
I am on mute. I do like every day, and I don't know why I'm still struggling with this thing.
I don't think most people have gotten accustomed to it, to be honest.
No, honestly, like I don't care how many times you use it, it's still, it just feels like unnatural as well, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But unfortunately, kind of the way of the future, I guess. But hi, yeah. Nice to meet you virtually.
I know, right?
I love the sweater that you have going on. Or you guys call it jumper, I think, right?
Sweater. But it's good that you've got the lingo down. So
I have a little bit of it.
Yeah,
I think the UK lingo is making its way to the US. So
I feel like, okay, what else do you know?
Hold on. So I know you guys don't say eggplant, you say aubergine. Right? Am I saying it correctly? There's more. You guys don't say pants, you say trousers, because we say pants.
Yeah. Do you know what we use pants for?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that can get a very awkward situation sometimes. Yeah. If you say pants over here, it's very confusing and people just look at you like, oh, that's a bit.
I mean, I've noted that. But like, is there something I would say the other way around? I know you were recently in the US. So is there things that you found you'd say and people would just look at you confused?
Okay, honestly, it was my pronunciation of water. So wherever I went, and I just think like, surely by now everyone knows that the British way of pronouncing water is water, right? Mm-hmm. So anytime anywhere, like any place, and I'd order just like, I just wanted just a bottle or something like that. And the first few times that I would say it, and I just, you know, I'd be like, hi, you're right, you know, can I get a bottle of water? And they just look at me like, I have no idea what you're saying. It's just completely blank face. And then I learned after the first few times that, okay, I need to clearly change my accent around or something. So I would go and I would order with, like, you know, I'd say, hey, how are you, in a very normal English British accent. But then I'd go, hey, how are you, can I get a bottle of water, please? And then
that's a really good switch. That was good. I don't have a really good British accent at all, actually, so I wouldn't be able to do that.
Okay, I really want you to try, and I want to see.
You want to teach me? I mean, okay, so obviously there's different accents, to, you know, depending on where you're from, I'm sure. But, and you know, something that's funny is, like, I was watching these videos online about, like, American accents and UK accents and stuff, and other people, non-Americans, always say that we have this main character syndrome, because we just think that, like, we're the standard. I'm not going to lie. I always grew up thinking I didn't have an accent. I'm like, no, this is a normal Yani. This is the standard. Everyone else has an accent. And then everyone's like, no, you have an accent. You have an American accent. And I don't know if I have a specific regional accent. I don't think I sound like a Valley girl or anything, but.
I mean, I'm really bad with like figuring out exactly where you're from, mm-hmm. which state and stuff like that. I mean, I know the Valley girl accent. And whereabouts are you from in the US?
I'm from California.
Okay. See, I don't know now if I'm saying, yes, you do sound like you're from California because you just said that you're from California. But
yeah,
the main character syndrome is, yeah, it's like, you know, in every End of the World movie you watch, and it's always like in New York, but only in New York, and it's always just happening there. I mean, it's fine.
I think it takes everyone to have a non-American friend, it could be from anywhere, it doesn't have to be like from the UK or something, but just someone else, maybe a similar Western culture, to be able to like humble us a little bit and just say, you know, the world doesn't revolve around you. Because I don't know, I just think that like with American culture being pretty, I would say, I don't know if like influential is the word, but like with media and stuff, especially when you talk about like the most popular shows and stuff like that. And like, I think people knowing American culture more. So yeah, we've never really had to adapt, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like with, I mean, even if you literally just take the fact that with America, it's so big that you really don't need to eat the country to feel like you've gone to a completely different part of the world, you know?
But have you only ever been to North Carolina? And I think I saw that you were like in New York or somewhere.
So I've been to the States twice. And so once it was for my brother's wedding. And then the second time was to go see my new baby nephew. Oh, he's so adorable. Aww. Honestly, like if I could, I could literally just talk for about an hour about him. I won't. But yeah, so when we went, it was North Carolina, and we were just going around. They live near Raleigh. So it's a town called Apex. We went to Chapel Hill. We went to Asheville as well. Asheville is very beautiful. I loved it. I like really loved my experience in the US. We were there for about a month. But for me, it was a very different kind of experience. But what kind of stood out to me the most is how no one likes walking ever. For someone who doesn't drive, like it's a big deal. So when we were there, we would just even the idea of going to a Target or Walmart, which by the way I love,
I'm glad.
People are like, why are you so obsessed with Target, Walmart? I was like, you just go in and there's so much selection of everything. Don't get me wrong, we have a selection in the UK, but this was, we went in and it was just like the amount of Oreos and the different flavors of Oreos that you guys have is like amazing. I wanted to walk me and my sister to the Walmart, but I remember my sister-in-law was like, no, you're going to be like walking on highways and God knows what. And I was like, no, it's fine. You know, Google Maps is only saying like half an hour. It's fine. We'll just go. And she was like, you're going to walk for like 30 minutes. That was so unheard of.
But that's normal for you.
Oh, like it's so standard for the way I'm speaking on behalf of all British people, but you know, on like 30, 40 minute walks, people just will walk to work and it's quite chill. I think especially in London, it's a bit like New York in the sense that it's there's a lot of traffic, so it's quite difficult to kind of go around everywhere by car. People tend to walk or just get the tube or the subway. It's like the more comfortable thing to do. I remember me and my sister were just walking on literal highways with cars just going past, and we were just like, we just want to go to Target. and then as we were making our way there, we were like, okay, this is getting more and more ridiculous. It's apart from the no walking thing, it was really nice. Obviously, like when I was talking to my sister-in-law and she was, we were just talking about like the healthcare and obviously if you don't have insurance, pay for healthcare. And like I've always heard that about America, but it was obviously quite shocking even because she was telling us in terms of if you don't have insurance and you're giving birth, something like skin on skin contact with your baby, you have to pay for. And that really shocked me. I was like, surely that's, I don't know how you can capitalize on something like that. Like that's your child. Like, how is that being monetized?
To be honest, that was something I actually recently found out too. Like, obviously I know how our healthcare system works, but I didn't know that like skin on skin contact was something that the hospital charges for you, because most people get a final bill, and let's say you do have private insurance and it covers like a certain percentage or whatever. Whatever's left, you're going to probably, you know, pay. I have a friend of mine who recently got pregnant, and she was saying that like she was reviewing, I think with like her doctor and her insurance plan, like how much it covers. And she was still going to have to cover like somewhere around $2,000, but no one really asks like, what is that for? And I think that they can just put whatever they want on there and no one's really going to question it. So it's really unfortunate. Yeah. And I know you guys have like the NHS and stuff, which is like really cool. We'll get there some point. I just saw the governor of California. He just announced that he wants, we're moving towards becoming the first state in the country to have national like health services or like some type of universal health care for all California residents. So I think, you know, we're slowly getting there. I don't know how long it's going to take. It's just so difficult when you're such a big country and you have so many different types of states. Like where you've been, if you just move a little bit more west to like the Midwest, it's going to be so different. And then you go to the East West Coast and it's so different. So the demographics are different. The climates, everything is just, it's a lot. I always tell my sister, like, I wish California could just be its own country. And then I think I'll be happy that way. The walking thing doesn't surprise me because I hear that a lot. And we also have like drive-throughs, which I guess aren't as common. Like the fact that we do drive-through for everything, like pharmacy, food, drinks, banks.
I was going to say that. Yeah, that's, this is what I mean in terms of the very different experience. So when we went and it was, you know, it's not like we were going out every day or anything like that, but and when we did, it would, you know, we'd be doing the big weekend trips, but day to day would just, you know, would just go around like the local area. But drive through banks, that's
I know.
There's no walking involved.
I mean, so where I live, it's a fairly large town, but it's not like a big city. So you're talking about like any type of business, storefront, whatever it is, like has a parking lot. And so we do the most minimal amount of walking here, which is why I like to go outdoors and like make myself walk. Because other than that, like you're literally going from your car, taking a few steps into entering a building or something and walking out. That's if it's not a drive-through where you're just in your car ultimately. But funny/small world. So your sister-in-law, I actually met a few years ago. So I think your brother came to speak at UC Berkeley and I was invited to that event. And that's where I think he came to speak, but she was there with him. And then we connected on social media. So I've known her for like some time, just, you know, casually, I guess you could say, through social media. And then I didn't know that that was your brother and your sister-in-law. And I was like, oh my God, subhanAllah, like what a small world.
It is, it's mad. I feel like, you know, all Yemenis know each other at the end of the day. There's much as I feel like, oh, it's a stereotype, or just because I'm Yemeni, it doesn't mean that I'm going to know every Yemeni in the world. By the end of it, I find that, you know someone who knows someone else, you know, and somehow you're connected through that. So that is, it's very much, it's a small world, but yeah, you know what it is as well, like Yemeni communities, I think it's a nice thing. We, you know, we find each other and like we stick with each other as well. So it's, you know, it comes with its pros and cons. But yeah, you're like, I know.
Actually, I was curious, like, I don't know a lot of, do I even know any Yemenis in the UK? Like our neighbors in Sana'a are, I know that they lived, I don't know where, I want to say somewhere more up north, like Sheffield area. I think there's a lot of Yemenis there, but, or like Birmingham, that type of area. But so I know that there's some people, like, I think that's the only Yemenis we know, but I always wondered, like, is the Yemeni experience the same everywhere? Because in my experience, in the US in general, like they tend to be a lot more conservative, not all, but especially when there's large communities of them just clustered together, they tend to be more conservative. Is that the case in the UK?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. That's definitely a con. So I mean, you guys, the Yemeni community, like I know the most famous one is like in Dearborn. I mean, that's what we always hear about. A lot of Yemenis, you know, in Michigan. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see if you kind of have had the same sort of experiences. So I was brought up in born and bred in Birmingham. So it has a very large Yemeni community, but the way they are quite conservative as well. I'm not sure if it's on the same level like the American Yemenis or if it's more, but I think, you know, maybe in the 1980s or something, a lot of Yemenis actually came to Birmingham. And I always like to think of it as, I don't want to be offensive, but like they've, a lot of people tend to, they're frozen in time, right? From the same mentality that they had when they first came over, right? And like to some extent, you know, it is understandable because I think a lot of the time with tight-knit communities, especially if you're living in the West, you do get quite, you become quite protective of your community, of your culture, of your mm-hmm. identity. And that's completely understandable, especially if you kind of, you don't know exactly what you're facing. And then you find like with time, as time progresses, and then more generations come about, then, you know, everyone kind of becomes a bit more lax. But yeah, so sometimes that kind of tightness manifests itself into like a conservatism. And I think that tends to be quite harsh on women the most. So yeah, so I think from my experience in Birmingham and I mean, alhamdulillah, with my family, they're quite open. So my mum and dad, my dad was really onto it, onto his daughters pursuing education, pursuing academia, going into higher education. You know, he was like, okay, you all need to do PhDs and get doctorates.
MashaAllah, that's amazing.
I did not want to do that. I was like, thank you. But yeah, but he was, you know, pushing me to go ahead and do... go and do like my master's. And I mean, he was the one that even said to me, like, you know, what was, so basically I did a master's in Middle Eastern studies. And then I finished that, but like deep down, I kind of always wanted to go into something more artistic, more art-based, more animation-based. And I'd kind of brought it up to him before, but he'd always be like, oh, yeah, Binti, go do something academic first, and then you can do the art and drawing later. Anyway, so I didn't really think of it again. But then when I kind of finished the master's, I feel like a couple of years later, he said to me, oh, yeah, there's, what was the course that you wanted to do? You know, the drawing one, the animation, and the animation course. And he was like, hey, you can do it now, you've you finished everything else, go and do it. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I went ahead and did it. Sorry, I went on a completely
Good, because I wanted to ask you about like what got you into art. Like, I love following other like Muslim, well, specifically like Yemen. I love following all artists, but like when I find another Yemeni artist, it's just really cool to connect, because I feel like we all do something similar but very different, which I think is so cool. And I'm obsessed, you probably know this, with your art, MashaAllah, that's beautiful, and like the animation pieces as well. And so I saw that you are, I thought either you were studying it or like on your, like, I don't know if it was like self-taught type of stuff, but was like, how long have you been doing art, or how long has, I guess, that been a part of your life?
Firstly, before getting into that, can I just say, like, MashaAllah, like, your artwork is amazing.
Thank you.
Genuinely, I think I remember seeing your art stuff well back, and I would, you know, either see it, people sharing it on Instagram or on Twitter, and you know, you'd like, some of the stuff was really simple, mm-hmm. And it, a kind of minimalistic, but you have such an eye for like the color, the design. It all looks so neat as well. But yeah, honestly, it's very beautiful work. So I'd see it and I'm like, oh my God, this stuff is amazing.
Thank you. That's sweet.
God knows how much time later we're actually able to have a conversation. But yeah, I was, okay, so what got me into the, what was your question again?
Like what, because so for like, for example, me, I kind of did a little bit of the opposite of you. I studied art first.
Right.
And it wasn't anything that was like formal in the sense of like learning technique, and like there was a little bit of that, it was more conceptual, and I liked art history, so, and I didn't even do any like digital stuff. Maybe there was photography, but most of it was like oil arts and charcoal, like that was it. And I studied political science at the same time. And then my parents were a little concerned, like, what are you really going to do with this? And that's when I went and I got my master's in public policy and administration. So it was a little bit more, you know, I think something that I could actually apply and like get a job for or in. But I've always loved art since I was like really young. It wasn't until I think I entered college that, or like university, that I thought, okay, this is something I actually want to pursue in some way. So is that like a similar thing for you? Like you grew up doing this, or is it just something more in your adult life?
Yeah. I mean, so for me, I mean, ever since I can remember and I was a little kid, I'd be constantly drawing and just kind of creating these worlds and these universes. So I'd literally just get a piece of paper and I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna like create a family, or I was really obsessed, this is really random, but I was really obsessed with creating I'd get like a piece of paper and design like a theme park, or design different cities and place different things here and there. And I just, I think as a kid, it just transported me into this completely different world. And it's kind of how I used to play, I guess. So this kind of interest in art and just that kind of creativity was a passion of mine since I was a little kid. And then I, you know, for university, what I studied, it was, like I said, quite academic. So I studied Arabic and history, and Middle Eastern studies. And then I'd always wanted to do something that was art-based, but I just didn't, it was one of those things where I just didn't know how to get there. It was like, how do I, take my passion and put it into something and put it into a career? And it's, you know, it's not just the fact that it's, you know, I don't just like drawing and I don't just like painting. It's, I want to showcase a message with that. And it's kind of my way of expressing myself. So something that's quite dear to my heart will, you know, whether it's Yemen or the Middle East or issues of identity. So it's, I think in my head, I wanted to be able to join both my interests and my arts and kind of be able to portray a message with that. So I think with me, when I went straight into work after I finished my studies, and that's when I went through the journalist route and I became a video producer for a Middle East news company. And I think, you know, when we look at traditional journalism, I mean, like, you know, newspapers or you know, if people don't really watch the news anymore, they don't read the news anymore. So you're finding with time, as time goes on, as people go more towards social media, they're looking for their news more in more visual ways. So I think as journalists these days, we have to find more creative ways of storytelling and more creative ways of telling the news, because people are moving away from the traditional means now. So video producing and kind of creating news stories with video it allows me to express myself creatively, but telling the news at the same time. So that's kind of how I went into journalism. And then through that, I was kind of thinking of ideas of how I can actually take animation and tell the news through animation as well. And so with that, I thought, okay, you know, again, taking that visual element and creating news that's just, it's interesting, it's inspiring. And I think especially with animation, you can, you know, you can take really humanistic stories and be able to tell it through the animation. So that was kind of the plan. And so with work now, like I do try to do, explainer videos explaining what's going on in the Middle East or what's going on in specific areas, but then using visual elements like illustrations, like animations, to just kind of help tell the story in a different way. So yeah, that's how I kind of incorporated the art with journalism. But as well, I don't know about you, but I found that actually, you know, using Instagram, using social media to be able to connect with the Yemeni community, whether it's you know, in your own city, whether it's the Yemeni diaspora all around the world, whether it's Yemenis who are living in Yemen currently, I just found that actually being able to do my artwork and being able to express my Yemeniness, my Yemeni identity through it, through the animations. And it, you know, it's literally, sometimes it's just a few seconds long, but it'll be something that I feel like we can all as Yemenis relate to. You know, it might even just be the buildings in Sana'a, the, you know, the very distinct, or it might just be the Qamariya windows, or the women wearing the sitara clothing. So just, you know, these little things that actually can connect to a lot of Yemenis all around the world. And I think what kind of connects us all is this idea that, you know, our love for Yemen, but at the same time, you know, obviously because of the situation there, it's a very different, it's not like everyone can go back or see their families or be able to kind of reconnect. So I feel like, I don't know, when I see other artists, other Yemeni artists, it genuinely makes me really happy, because it's like I'll see the art in it, and it just I feel like I feel nostalgic when I look at art pieces. So when I saw your artwork, I felt very nostalgic, and it's quite an emotional thing as well. So I think using, with all of us using our art to kind of just connect with the Yemeni community, it's also not something that a lot of Yemenis, obviously Yemenis are becoming more and more creative, I'm seeing more Yemenis in the creative fields, and like that genuinely makes me really happy.
Kinds of fields, right? Yeah. Too, like not just art. One, there's like the content creation, like social media content creation that you see a lot of Yemenis going into now, but there's so many different ways people are expressing their love for their, you know, culture or traditions, or like you said, just that nostalgic feeling and reconnecting. Like for me, it's always about reconnecting with what I can remember of Yemen, because I haven't been there since 2005. So it's been quite some time, and I was like a teenager at that time, or like, you know, a young teenager. And so it's sad to think that like what I would go back to now is not the Yemen that I saw pre-war. You know, so when I started seeing the shift after the, you know, the Arab Spring, and when the war started, when I started seeing the shift of like people actually saying like Yemen and hearing Yemen on the news, because that was not something I grew up hearing. It was not something that people were very familiar with when I would say, you know, I'm from Yemen. And now it's like everyone knows where Yemen is. Everyone knows that there's like, you know, a humanitarian crisis, that there's a war, all these things. And I don't want it to just be, you know, that's the only idea that people have of Yemen, because there's so much more to it. Like, of course, raising awareness is important, understanding, you know, the crisis and the suffering that's happening there. But also, like, I would really love to take the opportunity while people are, you know, have their eyes on it, to learn about like the beauty of, you know, the culture and the traditions and like the agriculture and our architecture and like all the things that like for us, and I'm assuming you've been to Yemen growing up or maybe have lived there, but that we can remember of it prior to the war. You know what I mean?
No, 100%. You know, it's funny because I remember, like you said, pre-Arab Spring, Yemen was barely mentioned anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think growing up, I was literally the only Yemeni ever. We're like amongst my group of friends and like,
same.
Forgetting the Yemeni community. And, mm-hmm. You know, obviously, cool, I was literally the only Yemeni. So I'd almost be like the Yemeni representative. So, you know, the only reference that anyone had to Yemen was that scene in Friends where Chandler has to go to Yemen to escape Janice. And it's like, 15 Yemen roads, and everyone would get, I was so excited when I discovered that episode. But even I remember as growing up, if Yemen was ever mentioned on the news, my dad would literally call us up from downstairs. He'd call us all to come down, the whole family, to come and watch, I don't know, some random news clip on like a random story on Sana'a or Taiz or something, and we'd all be just gathered around in the kitchen watching the news, really excited.
Do you guys have Jeopardy, or like you know of Jeopardy, right? The American show. So sometimes they'll have questions in like about Yemen, and my dad would also do the same thing. He'd be like, look, they're asking about Yemen, and like we'd sometimes, you know, try to rewatch it or like Google it later to try to see like what the what the clip was about. But the amount of excitement we'd have for just a little bit of representation.
And now we're like, enough. But yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it's really sad when you see that, you know, whenever you kind of, you say you're from Yemen, whenever I meet new people now and I say I'm from Yemen, I can always see it in their eyes. They're like, oh, you know, and there's a little bit of pity or like sorrow. And it's just, it's kind of sad because, like you said, yes, we should be raising awareness to what's happening and people need to know what's going on. But at the same time, it's a problem because it makes out as if all Yemenis are helpless victims. And that's obviously not the case. You know, when you kind of, when you talk about Yemen in only a charity or humanitarian way, you end up taking away Yemeni people's agency. And you kind of, you strip them down of their identity to only people that need help.
To that point about, you know, taking away the agency out of, taking Yemeni people's agency, I think about the way that the world today, or I'll speak about here in the US because I can't really speak for anywhere else, I'm not certain, but I know that the way that people still speak about Africa, which by the way, like the, people still talk about it like it's a whole country, but this idea that like there's starving children in Africa, you know, the idea that like forever that region is going to be portrayed a certain way because of like the propaganda and the way that like at least here the news media was portraying them as just so like helpless and like that white savior complex to like go help. And now people, one, think Africa is just one country and that people still live you know, like in huts and need help and are starving and not understanding like the dynamic and well the differences that you have in across the entire continent and across all countries there. And I think sometimes, like, again, very ignorant people are very surprised to know that there's like really great thriving cities in different parts of the continent and many countries. And I think that's where I was thinking, like, when the only information or the only time Yemen is talked about is in that light, it's, I feel like it's going to portray or like kind of stain the image people have of Yemen, and it'll always be like a poor, sad place. And I think that there's like negative implications of that.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Thank you so much for tuning in to part one of this two-part episode. Please be on the lookout for part two. You can do so by following This Muslim Girl podcast on Instagram and Twitter to get the latest episode information and content.